afford it anyway. So
but Dave wants you to talk about Dee Dee.
You give the title because I just wrote it in shorthand.
I have to make up a title.
Well, we can come up with a title. Get your mic just a little closer, John.
Directors. I mean, we're
just
talking about.
Just tilt it up.
It keeps falling down.
Oh.
Directors.
I have
pet
that
peeves.
Problem too.
Oh God. Okay. I'm leaving. No.
Director's pet peeves is what we were talking about.
Yes. Let's,
okay. We ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to episode 10 of Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This episode is entitled Director's Pet Peeves.
Volume 2.
And why is there never a volume 1? Because we always talk about
there was a volume 1. That's why we're making this volume 2.
The first 9 episodes was volume 1.
Why do we not discuss our problem?
Okay. I know. But this is more specific.
That's right.
You can say what it's specific about, David.
That's right. Well, this is specifically about stuff like backstage directors. We're going to be talking a little bit about, people who come to rehearsal late, folks who don't like to memorize, and folks who like to paraphrase. These are directors' pet peeves, okay? And, you know, we're all guilty of these things probably at one time or another, but they drive directors crazy. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter how important you are or anything else like that. It still drives directors nuts. But before we start, we have a couple of announcements. And one of them is something about our honorary geek, Dee Dee.
She was an honorary geek. Oh, okay.
Come back anytime.
I'll have to send her her hat.
All right. Yeah.
Her theater geek hat.
Theater geek
which
hat.
You all should have, by the way.
That's right.
To put on when you're listening.
Theatergeeks.com/store, and you can get yourself a Theater Geeks hat.
And it's not even tall and pointy.
It's not even a pointy hat. No.
No.
No, it's not a pointy hat. But what about Dee Dee?
Okay. Dee Dee is about to take part in the William Inge Festival in Independence, Kansas, which is, I guess, where he was born, because this year it's honoring Paula Vogel, who was the author of How I Learned to Drive, which Dee Dee did off-Broadway and in Washington, D.C., and several other places. And so she's going to be there for a week doing a variety of things. And she also is going to read another book on tape, or at least one story in an anthology or a collection, and she told me the title, and it's so long I can't remember what it was. But anyway, and then she is doing a small part in a new movie starring Cameron Diaz and Justin Timberlake, which currently is titled Bad Teacher, and she's playing someone's mother. And I guess it's kind of on the, although I don't know because I don't see those movies, the kind of Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, that kind of comedy thing. And that's last week and next week. And then she's going to Kansas. And so things are kind of looking up, which is very good because, as we all know, anytime an actor has a job, he's also out of a job because it's all going to end eventually. And then you have to start looking again.
Mm. That's right. So she's
unlike your neighborhood bookkeeper.
She's got a job, but she's really unemployed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I get it.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm happier when she has a job and is unemployed than whether she's unemployed and unemployed.
And hasn't got, got anything coming up.
Right,
yeah, right.
Right.
Now, being unemployed and having a job that starts later is not necessarily as good as being employed and then not having a job coming up.
Whatever, right. David. I'll agree.
Are we getting confused?
And we have to say David is a new grandfather. We'll let him get that off his chest right now.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I couldn't let an episode go by without mentioning that Anya Lynn Nonneman was born on Friday, and she's 8 pounds, 1 ounce, and just full of trouble. Anyway, no, I don't know. Anyway, she's not full of trouble. She's a little cutie. Anyway, it's my first grandchild. So anyway, that's enough. We don't have to talk about that. So we're going to talk about pet peeves. Our first pet peeve. Who wants to start?
Go, John. You can. I've just talked. You can talk.
I get to talk now.
Yes, you do.
Well, I have nothing to announce, just so you all know. But, one of my biggest problems are people, performers or even technicians, who think that they can direct backstage. meaning that it's their job to give other actors notes and to make sure, you know, like, well, if I were you, I would do it this way. Well, that's a real irritant, especially as a director, when I hear that
yeah.
kind of thing, because it's not their job to tell other performers what they're supposed to do.
Right. Yeah.
And I think don't limit it to saying backstage directing, because this backstage directing can take place anywhere that's not on stage.
Right.
It can happen in the lobby.
Yeah.
It can
absolutely.
Happen while you're all sitting having a drink at the bar after a rehearsal.
That's right. Discussing
somebody says, I really think you should do it this way, you know.
Right.
But it could be a real problem, especially if it contradicts something that the director has specifically asked that actor to do. And then suddenly you've got another person whispering in your ear. And as an actor, I mean, there's always this, I don't know about anybody else, but when I perform, there's always this sense of insecurity that
absolutely.
Am I doing it right? Am I getting it the way the director wants it? And if somebody gives me an idea, sometimes it gets stuck in my head and I might do that. But a lot of times, when we've talked about this, I still will throw something past the director before I just do it on stage if it's something big. It's amazing how helpful people wish to be backstage.
Ah, yes. Helpful,
helpful in quotes.
I had a situation where I was in a play with he had been a theater student, but he was more of a tech person, but he was being given a chance to direct. This was called California Suite. And I was in this one scene with another person, with another woman. There was just two people in the scene, and the director was giving directions, et cetera. And first thing was that he was sort of nailing us for paraphrasing a little bit, which we're going to talk about in a minute. I think we were both doing it a little bit. But anyway, the point is he corrected a line, and the actress that I was working with said, well, we can get that pretty close, can't we? Like she was in charge, okay? So that's one thing. And then we got backstage, and she goes, let's just do what we want. And that's just what I said, I am going to do what the director tells us to do. I said, if we want to change something, we'll talk to him about it. And I was like, I was like a bad guy for that. But the thing is, I think that there are, you know, usually there should be a few people backstage who are actors who will sit there and go, you know what? Knock that crap off. Mm-hmm. You know, there really ought to be. I don't know if there ever are or not, but I mean, I did it once, but that doesn't mean that anybody else.
Well, and I think if you're feeling uncomfortable with a line or whatever, that you should take it to the director and say, this just doesn't feel right to me. Is there any other way I could do this that would make it fit better with my character? Or, you know, you are not supposed to change anything in a script when pay the royalties and you rent the book, boy, you're supposed to stick to that
legally.
And I think most actors that I have worked with paraphrase because literally they get stuck. They can't remember. They know the gist of a thing, but they can't get it word for word. And so they just kind of go off on their own. And at one time, I worked with somebody whose theory was, well, as long as I get the cue line right, you shouldn't have to worry. And I thought, oh, you have no idea how much I'm worrying, you know, that you're not even going to get there.
Oh, you mean as long as they say the cue line for the next actor?
Yeah, as long as they say the cue line for the next actor, then that's okay, whatever they do in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then that's the extent of their concern for other actors.
Well,
apparently.
And I think in this particular person's case, it was really because they were having a lot of trouble. There were big, long speeches, and they were having a lot of trouble keeping them in the proper order. And sometimes it got really hairy on stage, and we kind of sit there looking at each other going, well, okay, are we going to get there or not? And are we going to have to jump in to make this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another
problem.
Well,
that's the other problem is that, right. Well, the thing that gets me, too, is that getting back to the story I was saying is that my concern, it wasn't even so much that she and I were going to get confused. It's that I didn't want to be this guy's first experience as a director and have the cast run over him.
Right.
You know, it is community theater. You know, he's supposed to be learning something too. And there was another director that was kind of overseeing the whole thing. So, you know, he would have been saved had something been wrong, you know.
Well,
and
hopefully,
so it was just one of those deals anyway. But the thing that gets me too is that that a lot of actors, it's not that they forget, or it's not that they have a trouble with like long speeches so much. It's that they will come up with their own version of the lines, and then they'll rehearse the paraphrasing.
They rehearse the paraphrasing.
They rehearse the paraphrasing.
Oh, okay,
forever.
I don't think I've ever.
It doesn't change.
Done that
it doesn't. A lot of actors don't change once they lock into the wrong lines.
And as a director, well, I have gotten to the point, you know, because sometimes they do. They just set that line, and no matter what they do, it's not going to change at that point. And then I look at the actress that person's playing opposite, and I just say, okay, I guess that's your new cue line, because it's been that way now for the last three rehearsals, and nothing I've said is going to make a difference, even though I've tried to make sure that gets changed.
Right.
You know. So, but yeah, you know, paraphrasing can just really, well, first of all, I mean, you know, every theater does different kinds of work, but, and maybe it's not fair to say that some authors' work deserves less paraphrasing than other authors' works. Everybody works really hard when they create a play, but I mean, the last thing you want to do is sit down in the middle of Arthur Miller or Tennessee Williams and think that you know better than what they knew,
or Neil Simon,
or what they were trying to say. Yeah.
I mean that you knew better, that somehow in your brain what you're saying is more accurate for the character than what that particular author thought.
I tell my actors that the playwrights they spend a whole day writing these plays.
Yeah.
And I tell that is my whole point. I said no matter what you come up with, it is probably not going to have the same rhythm, impact, or sound as what Arthur Miller or Neil Simon came up with. And in the case of Neil Simon, it may not even be funny when it was at one time. You know, you don't, you know, changing the lines is not a good thing anyway. But especially with a writer like those, where the rhythm and the poetry in the lines is so important that, you know, paraphrasing just can kick the stuffing out of a show.
Right. Well, and I think as long as we're talking about that, we ought to offer some suggestions on how to overcome this. And the only thing that I've learned is that if an actor has something stuck in his head and does it a couple of times in a row, so you know that that's what he really thinks or she really thinks the line is, you got to stop right there and go back over it and over it and over it and over it until the right line comes out all the time. Well, if you think it's that important. If you don't, well, then let them go paraphrase. But if it's important, then you have to stop and fix the problem then.
Well, it's one of the things that I lay down at the beginning of rehearsals that paraphrasing is just out. I mean, it's just we're just not doing it. And I speak of this as a former paraphraser myself. I was guilty of it. I mean, because I'm such a stickler for it now, I, as a director, whenever I'm on stage, I'm really careful. Like I really kick myself if I do it by accident, because I really don't. I feel like if I'm going to be sticky about it, I better be strict with myself too. So
I think it's also important as the director to continue to encourage the cast to go back to the script. Often we hit that first memorization rehearsal and I memorized now, I don't need to pick the script back up again. But not only going back to the script keeps you from learning something, or you say to yourself, oh my gosh, look, I have memorized that incorrectly, I can change it now. But also the more you go back to the script as a performer, often the more you will find, you know, it's amazing if you sit there and or lay in bed. I often memorize in bed, or I go review my script in bed just before I go to sleep at night. And you know, you go through it and you go, oh, that's what they're, you know, and you come up with a completely different interpretation of what maybe in your head originally was kind of just a mundane line. And all of a sudden it takes on a whole new life. And we have to continue as directors to encourage performers to go back into their scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And all too often, they just go away from the script and they stop.
We did a production. I've directed a couple of productions of Arsenic. And the second time I did it, we got the cast was getting more and more off track. And we kept saying, hey, folks, you know, and so we finally sat down with the script. We just went into the green room and sat down and read the script through. Or I'm not even sure. We did a line rehearsal where the AD corrected every single line. Yeah. And some of the people in the cast were just astounded at how often their lines were just wrong.
And you get used to hearing a wrong line. And
right.
So,
yeah,
and
exactly.
As a performer, oh, that's my cue. It was what we were talking about. Okay, that's my cue.
Yeah.
Even though it's the wrong cue, that's the cue that I have now. Right. So I will come in with my line.
Yeah, and we tend to let it go, like you say, sometimes. We decided it's not important because, you know, hey, we got a rehearsal schedule to keep.
Gotta
we can't do this all day. Yeah. And yet, you know. So.
Which brings us to another pet peeve, which is setting a date for first rehearsal off book, which means no scripts in your hand. And people that constantly miss that deadline.
Right.
You know?
I didn't see that on the calendar.
Oh,
was that on the calendar?
Oh, we're supposed to have our script.
Off book,
no,
off book.
Because no matter how much you've tried to memorize or sat down and read your lines over and think you have them memorized, the first rehearsal off book is always horrifying. You just come up to a point and you're just blank, or you can't remember, or that's when you start the paraphrasing because you think, oh, I had a line and it went something like this, so I'll just say whatever I think, you know? And the deadline for memorization is there for a reason, because the director has gone over the rehearsal schedule and figured out we have to start here to get through that difficult first act, second act, whatever memorization period, so that we can move on with the characters, you know? And people that periodically and consistently miss those dates are hurting themselves, and they're hurting the rest of the production.
Well, and they also hurt by cramming just prior to that as well. You know, it's just like cramming before a test.
Yeah.
You know, I'll sit for an hour and a half before I go to rehearsal, and I'll just cram.
We had a short interruption, folks, and we are doing a short, we had to do a short cut here. But one of the things we were talking about is that memorization is, how important memorization and doing it properly is. And John was talking about the fact that cramming right before a rehearsal probably doesn't do you very much good.
Not at all. Well, it's my pet peeve. It is a pet peeve of mine, in fact, and I encourage performers not to do it at all. The brain needs the same amount of time to relax as it does when you cram. So if you cram for an hour and a half or 2 hours, the brain needs that exact amount of time basically to relax and process. So if you cram right up to the moment when you walk out onto the stage and then you try to start reciting these lines, your brain just cannot process it. And all you're going to do is just kind of fumble over yourself. So it's really important to take your time. That's why memorize just before you go to bed. Memorize at lunch, and then knowing that your rehearsal is in the evening, because we were talking about community theater, and most of us don't rehearse it during the day. Memorize at lunch, memorize right after work, and then give yourself that amount of time to just kind of process. Either go to dinner, read another book, you know, read a magazine, do something, but let your brain kind of just digest.
Are there some good dietary rules about that help you?
No Diet Coke.
No Diet Coke.
No diet. No aspartame. If you
really?
You've got a huge memorization,
that's true anytime.
Well,
pardon me.
No,
bad
you're exactly
for you.
Right. As I drink my Diet Coke, but no, totally serious. They say aspartame creates holes in your memory, which are fillable. They can be filled back in if you just stop drinking Diet Coke.
See,
soda. But yeah,
get off that diet
I had
stuff,
a,
David.
I had a huge
what did
role
you say?
To memorize one time.
Yeah.
I don't remember what role it was. I think it was Christopher Wren. I was playing Christopher Wren in The Mousetrap. And I was having a really hard time memorizing it. And the lead actress said, you know, you really ought to just stop drinking Diet Coke until you've got it memorized. And I did. And it was amazing how much quicker I was able to memorize.
Is Splenda
and it could have
okay?
just been a...
Now, see, all actors will now stop
is
drinking
okay?
Diet Coke.
What is it like? Can you like, eat bananas or anything like that? Is that like good or...
What
like,
is brain food?
I don't know.
Fish is
Dr.
brain
Oz
food.
Dr. Oz says broccoli and...
I love broccoli.
Walnuts and beer.
That's why... Oh, well, 2 out of 3 isn't bad. That's why I'm so
those are the
brilliant,
three
David.
To eat.
Broccoli, walnuts, and beer.
Broccoli. Yeah. Yes, combined.
And you don't eat... But no beer.
No beer.
We really got off. I just got us off track, which I'm really good at.
Broccoli, walnuts in a blender with beer.
Yeah, with beer on the side.
Yeah,
no
go.
Thanks. Okay.
Like that's a shake and a half. Okay.
So,
right.
But yeah, no. So, but I don't
well,
know if there's anything.
Well, you know, the other thing that we were going to talk about this time, unless we're just barbling on forever, is that when you have trouble memorizing and you're stumbling over your lines, it directly affects the focus that you have
major.
As far as your character and where it's going and what you're doing there. And it can really be horribly detrimental to the whole entire production.
And it's sort of a fine line, though, because you tell people when they're on stage, if they lose a line, call for line, but don't break character. But yet It's very hard not to break character. Yeah.
David, have you ever been on stage and forgotten a line?
Yes.
Of course, me too. You absolutely can't hear if they're prompting you. I don't think people today use prompters as much. I really don't, if at all. But I remember one time during performance.
Oh, we never do that.
Oh, well, I know they used to do it all.
They used to do it, but it doesn't matter because even when people on stage are standing there trying to give you your line out of the corner of their mouth, and you're going, what are they talking about? I don't hear anything.
That's right.
What are they saying?
Yeah, right,
you
yeah.
just can't no assimilate that.
I'm just thinking in terms of just during rehearsal.
Oh, rehearsal.
I get upset during rehearsal if I can't remember what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, well, then you are supposed to call for a line.
Yeah, right.
And listen.
But I mean, you know. So.
But there are other things, too. I mean, and that's why we always say just come to rehearsal prepared. And come to rehearsal to rehearse. And it's easier said than done, but to leave your work at work, leave your, you know, if you're having a hard time with a kid at home, try to leave that at home if you can, because it directly affects your focus
yeah.
at rehearsal and the ability to get through it. And you know, okay, so if that's going to happen, you go to the director and say, look, I'm having problems with my son right now, and I can rehearse for an hour, but I need to get home. And usually a director is going to say, you know what, I get that. I get
yeah.
that.
Right.
This is because we're, even though we may be doing a drama or a tragedy, but we're still all here really for fun. I mean, that's why we do community theater.
Sure.
And if you can't come into a rehearsal completely focused, then it's important to make sure that the director understands why and whether or not they need to help relieve you of that evening as well. Because if you're not going to be focused during the evening, you might
right.
as well not even be there.
Right.
Right.
We all agree. I can't believe it.
I mean, I've let
it's
people
very
go
good.
Home
it's good.
A number of times because of that.
Okay.
Well, I think it's time for us to toddle on home because we're running out of time for this episode of Theater Geeks. We will come back to pet peeves of directors.
There's
I am
so
sure
many.
There are so
yes.
many. In fact,
we have
we
an
might
endless
just do
list.
You cut your
can...
hair?
Yeah.
There's my next
one. Oh. Whoa,
oh,
wait a
no.
minute. Oh, God. Maybe we can't stop. Let's keep on. Yeah.
Yes, no, no. We can come back to this.
That's right.
Let's come back.
What do you mean it's
them...
not period? Okay. Okay. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we obviously are theater geeks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Theater Geeks. If you have a suggestion for a topic that you'd like to hear us discuss, or just a question, or just a comment, use our feedback form at theatergeeks.com. Music for Theater Geeks was provided by musicalley.com.